Hello, I'm Paul Payak. This is number 0130, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0130. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet relationship coach David Y. Gant. He's the author of Naked, How to Find the Perfect Partner by Revealing Your True Self.
What Naked really is all about is realizing that if you don't respect yourself, don't love yourself, and continue to give the power away to people on a date, you're going to constantly get the same crappy relationships over and over and over again.
David Golshan is a stand-up comic who is one of the stars of Shaws of Sunset.
They came to me and they said, we want to film you, going out with your friends and going to club. It's not really like Jersey Shore. It's a little bit different. It chronicles our individual lives.
Dougie Love is the owner of Dougie Dog Hot Dogs in Vancouver. They make the most expensive hot dog in the world that sells for $100. What goes into it?
The buns are foot long. It starts with a sourdough sweet bun. And then we have a homemade bratwurst sausage made for Dougie Dog Special. And what we do is we cut it open after we cook it and put it on the broiler. And then we infuse it with cognac, Louis XIII, which is Louis XIII. And then we put Kobe beef over that, baby. And then we put very generous portions of lobster on it. 3 pounds of lobsters, tomatoes, and some truffles. And our secret sauces, of course, is amazing.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0130, was Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor. He's been on the program a couple of times. A media analytics company that documents, analyzes, and tracks cultural trends in language all over the world with a particular emphasis on global English. And I thank Paul for doing this edition of the Stuff File Slate for the Stuff File program. And I want to remind you that you can now hear the Stuff File program on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is, in case you don't know, a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone or any mobile device you might have. And when you download Stitcher to hear the Stuff File program, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store, and you can download it. It's free. It just takes a few seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Stuff File. And again, Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. So Stuff File, S-T-U-P-H-F-I-L-E, and you'll get automatically entered to win $100, a chance to win $100. Now, the latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of amazing shows, too, not just the Stuff File, although, why would you want to listen to any other? No, I'm kidding. There's like 5,000 shows on Stitcher, and there's no syncing. It's just on demand. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. So don't forget to enter the promo code Stuff File when you register. Let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? Well, homeless people in Austria are lining up for shelter at a popular brothel after Peter Laskaris, owner of the Red Rooms Lofthouse in Vienna, has offered them free rooms during the current coal spell. Now, much of Europe is going through an unusually deep, deep cold freeze, hitting temperatures of about 20 below on a regular basis. Larry is offering 10 people a night a bed in his brothel for free, including a hot shower and a hot meal. He was quick to emphasize that his other services were not included, but the generous offer has been so popular that he's now in talks with other brothels in Vienna to open their doors to the homeless folks, saying, "We are not really doing much business in the current cold weather anyway, and it is the school holidays. A lot of people are off and away with their families." Well, let's just let that last quote sink in for a moment. It's the school holidays, so a lot of people are off away with their families. Anyway, he said that every room had a bed and a private shower, and each guest would get clean bedding each day and fresh towels. Isn't that nice? Oh, sure, the homeless are nice and toasty in bed, but in the meantime, what are the poor, underutilized hookers doing? Anyway, a government minister in Zimbabwe says work has stopped on new water reservoirs because workers have been scared off by mermaids. No, I can't make this up if I tried. Water Resources Minister Samuel Sipepa Nkomo told a parliamentary committee that terrified workers were refusing to return to the sites, and the only way to solve the problem was to brew traditional beer and carry out rites to appease the spirits. The long overdue reservoirs are considered essential if Zimbabwe is to provide adequate water to its population and to boost agricultural production. The belief in mermaids and other mythical creatures is widespread in the country, where many people combine a Christian faith with more traditional and often kooky beliefs. We should just send them Daryl Hannah movie posters. That would really freak them out. Moving right along, after receiving a tip that a black GMC SUV was carrying narcotics, police in Jacksonville, Florida, pulled behind the vehicle when out hopped 27-year-old Ariosto Wyman from the passenger side. And we do mean hopped. And then he kept hopping. It seems Mr. Wyman is missing his right leg below the knee, and he literally tried to hop away from police. Guess he realized it was useless, because when officers called to him, he stopped and just basically hopped right back. Officers searched him and found a bag of marijuana as well as a digital scale with cocaine residue on it located on the floorboard. And as Wyman was searched at the Duval County Jail, police, they discovered another bag with 120 grams of cocaine concealed inside his body. Yes, you heard me right. I said 120 grams of cocaine concealed inside his body. You really don't want me to paint a picture for you, do you? Yeah. And call it sweet justice, police in Kentucky arrested a man after they found him completely covered in chocolate and peanut butter lying down on a supermarket floor. Oh yeah, he was covered, and otherwise he was naked. According to police in the report, 22-year-old Andrew Toothman smashed through the Food World IGA's glass front door wearing only boots. He then emptied all of the market's fire extinguishers and spelled out sorry on the floor using NyQuil before heading to the confections. News reports quoted a police officer as saying, "It was the biggest mess I'd ever seen." Toothman was booked into the Letcher County Jail. A naked guy booked into the Letcher County Jail. What are the odds? On charges of indecent exposure, burglary, and criminal mischief. And while we're on the topic of naked, one more story to share with you in the Stuff File program before we get to our next guest, or first guest, whose book, by the way, is called Naked. Just a coincidence. Mothers everywhere used to warn their children to wear clean underwear in case they got into an accident, but this guy apparently didn't get the message. Police arrested a man they said was running naked from the scene of a car crash near Cleveland. Gee, do you sense there's a theme developing here? The nude man, and to be fair, he was wearing a pair of socks, was either the driver or passenger of the blue Ford Taurus that collided with another car at 2 a.m. in Beechwood, Ohio. Cops charged Toriano Brown with driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol and reckless driving. His passenger, Willie Chandler, and he might have been the naked guy. Again, a naked guy named Willie, write your own joke, was busted for alleged weapon possession. Boy, I don't know if he was wearing a seatbelt during the accident or not, but if he was, think of the chafing. Yeah. Okay, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. David Weigand is an internationally renowned dating and relationship coach, and he's also an author and speaker. His latest book is entitled Naked: How to Find the Perfect Partner by Revealing Your True Self. And David joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, David.
Hey, Peter. How you doing today?
Yes, tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Right off the bat, the idea of being naked, and I'm assuming you mean emotionally, is that people, I would assume, are either afraid of not being taken seriously or having it not reciprocated. Would that be a safe assumption?
Yeah. Actually, more than that, I've been doing this for 14 years, really coaching men and women, and I found that everybody's hiding behind what I call that game. You know, the men don't know how to approach the women because they think the women need to hear something, so they try to come up with something clever. The women think the men want to chase, so they play some type of game. And when it comes down to dating, everybody's so afraid to show all their cards. You know, they always got to, I'm only going to show two cards tonight because, you know, I want the person to want me. You know, it's like, I'm not going to be real. I'm not going to be me. I'm going to be somebody else at this time. And what Make It really is all about is realizing that if you don't respect yourself, don't love yourself, and continue to give the power away to people on a date, you're going to constantly get the same crappy relationships over and over and over again.
Well, you mentioned it's a game. In our culture, let's be honest, the dating game hasn't been around, as far as we as a people are concerned, for a long, long time, because if you go back far enough, most people were matched. So from that perspective, if most people were matched, when did this dating game start?
I think the dating game probably started in the early 1900s, when people started going out there and meeting people. They started doing it in the bars, and then Prohibition came, and they had to go to little hideouts and so forth. But people started meeting. It used to be a lot easier. You know, everybody was, you know, everybody knew each other. The world sort of exploded. You know, I think in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the world started expanding so much, so everybody started having a choice. But the problem is that with that choice, most people can't make any choices because they're constantly either A, caught up on somebody that they want to be with, B, they've got some fantasy about somebody they want, and C, most importantly, they're really afraid to let it all go because they live in what I call in the book pastors. They're people that live in the past. They're constantly thinking about a past relationship. So, you know, it's like, this guy hurt me or this woman hurt me. So then when they go out on a date, they're just not being honest. They're not being open. They're too stuck in the outcome. They care too much about what the other person thinks because they don't know how to play the game of dating to begin with.
As a dating and relationship coach, who do you have a more difficult time getting through to, men or women?
It's funny, women listen to me because they know that I'm speaking as a man, you know, so they, you know, I tell a woman all the time, if you need to go, you know, I tell women this all the time, 90% of the men will not approach women. So basically 100% of the women are fighting for 10% of the men. So it kind of puts the reality into women's, you know, consciousness. And whenever I tell a woman to do something, she'll go, she'll flirt, she'll smile. Now with a man, I'm not about pickup lines. I think pickup lines are absolutely ridiculous. I'm about connecting with a woman in the moment that she's experiencing. I make an observation, I say something, I listen to what she has to say, and I carry on a conversation based on that moment. It's real simple. But men will look at me and go, you know, that seems too easy. I got to say something clever. You know, I just can't just talk to her like she's a normal person. I got to talk to her like she's some type of alien or whatever it is. So men will battle it because they want to overcomplicate things. And women, when I basically tell them that they're fighting for 10% of the men, they wake up immediately.
Okay, so that idea you just mentioned, that a guy will think that he's got to say something more, say something clever, say something witty, where does that come from? Because we don't learn it, do we?
I don't think we learn it, but we hear it all the time. Like, we read these stupid magazines, and we listen to interviews, and we watch television, and women always say, you know, the best thing I like about a man is his sense of humor. And what men don't realize is that I think every single person in the world is funny, as long as they're being, you know, themselves, because everybody has a different perspective on the way they look at things. Some people are a little quirkier, but everybody will say something that is amusing if it's based on their natural instincts, if it's based on what they really think. And what men mix up all the time is when women say they want a sense of humor, they want a guy that's funny, sure, but they want a guy that's that's sure of himself, a guy that when he does say something that's funny, it's actually something that's funny in the moment. It's a real reaction to something that's going on. They don't want the guy to come over and perform a pickup line or perform an act and make her laugh hysterically based on something that's not really happening. She would prefer a guy to be natural in the moment. And to her, that is what she means being funny. And I think that's what society has gotten the men to think, that they got to be some type of stand-up comedian when they meet women.
Okay, so you said that 90% of the guys won't go and talk to a woman, correct?
Correct.
So what do women have to do to attract that 90%?
Get naked. No, what women basically need to do is they need to be more proactive. I've called women passive waiters for years. You know, They basically sit back, and what they do is they sit back all the time, and they think that some guy's going to show up, and it never does. So I tell women all the time, use their raw sexuality. You know, men are hunters by nature. Women basically are women are basically there to be hunted. So I tell women all the time, smile at a guy. Make it easy for him to come over. Say hello if you find a guy attractive that comes under the elevator with you, you know. Smile at him. When you're out at a bar, face the crowd. Don't face your friends. Wave at a guy. Be playful. Have a good time. Every woman that I've ever given this advice to that's gone out and been proactive in her dating life has actually met men because she starts attracting different men. Most women will do nothing and expect. It's like they almost expect the guy to approach. And women need to go and make it easy. And I know women listening right now will be saying to themselves, no, that's ridiculous, because if I make it easy, the guy's going to think that all I want to do is have sex with him. That's not true, because when it's easy for a guy, and especially the guys that have trouble meeting women, if a woman smiles at a guy, says hello to him, and the guy gets to start a conversation, all he's thinking about is there must be some type of gift going on right now, because this doesn't happen to me regularly. He's not thinking about sex. He's just really jazzed that he probably has an opportunity to go get that phone number and actually get a date. Sex is not even in the equation in his mind at all right now.
There's also the other side of that coin. Some guys listening to this might be thinking, oh, a woman who is flirting or coming on to me, oh, it's Glenn Close Fatal Attraction time.
Nah, not even close. There's no bunny boilers here. You know, I mean, the way I look at it is this. You know, we choose attraction, okay? You know, and attraction is, there's no choice with attraction. If a woman starts smiling at you and you're not attracted to her, pass. It's your choice. You know, you make the choice not to hang with her, not to ask her out, whatever it might be. And that's what people need to get a little thick skin, because what people do all the time is they'll go and they'll try something. And we have a society of triers. They like to try one time, and if it doesn't work, especially when it comes down to dating and meeting people, they give up and quit because they think to themselves, well, that didn't work. And what I tell people all the time when it comes down to that is, it may not have worked on that person. That person had a choice. That person chose not to go out with you, not to ask for your phone number, not to ask you out, whatever it might be. But in life, when you do something over and over again, you get good at it. When you get good at it, more people choose to want to participate in whatever you're talking about at that moment, and you'll have more chances to go meet people and more opportunities to get more dates. So then you won't come across as that bunny boiler looking psychotic, thinking to yourself, if it doesn't work with this guy that I'm talking to right now, then you know what, I'm just going to go back and I'm just going to go boil some bunnies in a pot of water, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to chant and destroy every single man going forward.
Now, what you're talking about, at the very core, does it change from generation to generation? The reason why I ask that, the way men and women seem to interact with each other is different from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s to this millennium that we're in. And conversely, someone who may have been married for a long time, either widowed or divorced, and is going back into the dating scene, is it a different game than when they were dating the first time?
Oh, it's a much different game nowadays because of technology. I mean, you know, it used to be boy meets girl, boy writes down the phone number on a scrap of paper, boy calls her up, leaves a message on an answering machine, girl comes home, checks the answering machine, gets excited, calls the boy back. Nowadays, it's a technology-based game. You know, people are afraid to pick up the phone. You know, good luck when you get a phone number if the person will actually call you back. You got to leave a cute little message so they actually call you back. Or you got to rely on texting. I mean, I know people, they've been dating for 2 months, they never talk on the phone, they just text back and forth, or they Facebook, or they poke each other on Facebook. It's a whole different game now. So if you're divorced coming into the game now, you got to learn how to use technology to flirt. You got to learn how to use technology to basically connect with each other. And you got to learn how to put technology down when you're on a date, because if you pick up that BlackBerry or that iPhone when you're on a date, you're basically never going to get another date with that person ever again. So it's a whole different game now than it was 15, 20 years ago. If people are coming out of a long, you know, relationship, a long marriage, it's all different.
You say you've been doing this for about 15, 20 years. What was it 15, 20 years ago that you said, I got to help these people?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always been an entrepreneur, and I was doing seminars teaching people the mindset to be successful when it came down to business. And I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my passion. My passion was always about human interaction. I owned bars. I mean, I was in the bar business for a long time. And I just noticed that, you know, boy meets girl stopped at a certain age. You know, it's just, I found that people were very socially not conscious of what they were doing, and also in their head a lot. So I started really meeting women out and about, I mean, in Whole Foods and coffee shops and so forth. And one day I was sitting at a coffee shop and I wanted to go to Whole Foods and get a sandwich. And I was sitting there with a bunch of guys. This was in the mid-90s. And I said, I'm going to go get a sandwich. And I said, anybody, you know, I said, everybody throw me $5. I'll bring you back some good lunch. And they all looked at me and they all got up, all 10 of them, like it was, you know, the greatest thing that ever happened. They said, we're going to follow you in and we're going to figure out why we spent $100 on a Friday night and you go get a salad and a date. And they followed me into Whole Foods. They watched me flirt, and they looked at me and they said, this is like a little mini boot camp. Can we do this next weekend? And I looked around and I said, wait a second. They were all successful men. They were all good guys. And I started thinking to myself, maybe there's a business here because I love doing this. So I practiced on them, taught them everything that I knew, and they were all very successful meeting women. And the next thing you knew, I started getting a little publicity as the guy that took people in the supermarkets, and I was off to the races.
And the book is called Naked, How to Find the Perfect Partner by Revealing Your True Self. It's written by David Wygant. You know, David, one of the things I find interesting is that you say you're a bar owner. Some of the best psychologists in the world are bar owners or bartenders. So it's, I guess, is where you get your a chance to study from.
We hear everything. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you can't escape people. You know, when you bartend from, especially in New York City where I was from, you bartend from 4 in the afternoon to 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, so when it's busy, you're just watching people interact and basically screw up and not meet each other. When it's not busy, you're listening to their stories. And everybody has a story. And they come to a bartender or a hairdresser or anybody that's standing all day long talking to clients. And they're basically dumping their stuff and they want an answer. And eventually you got to help them figure out the answers. So it's been a fascination of mine my entire life. And I love what I do. It's not work. You know, the seminars that I do, the books that I write, you know, the clients that I work with, it's really giving them the information so they can find, you know, love. They can find a relationship, you know, and they can feel better about themselves. And that's what's really important.
And people can get the answers from your book and also go to your website, which is davidwygant.com. And Wygant is spelled W-Y-G-A-N-T. David, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thank you for the opportunity, and I'll talk to you soon.
David Wygant, author of Naked, How to Find the Perfect Partner by Revealing Your True Self. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0130, and you'll find links to David's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, now heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, you'll meet one of the stars of the television show The Shaws of Sunset. And Also, you'll meet Dougie Love, the owner of Dougie Dog Hot Dogs, which makes the most expensive hot dogs in the world. Plus, there's an idiot of the day, and of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now. Now, it would seem that even India has its fair share of hypocrites. Three members of India's morally conservative party, including a woman's affairs minister, have all resigned after being caught watching porn on a cell phone during a session of parliament. Not before, not after, during. TV news showed footage of Karnataka State Minister for Cooperation Laxman Savati sharing a porn clip with his colleague C.C. Patel, the Minister for Women and Child Development, while sitting in the State Assembly. The owner of the phone was State Minister for Ports, Science and Technology, Krishna Palamar. Patel denied that any of the men were deliberately looking at porn, but resigned as to not cause any further embarrassment for their party. Why does it always appear to be that the folks on the extreme right have looser morals than the ones on the left that they are always rallying against? Have you noticed that? And how lame is this? The former mayor of Hawthorne, a suburb of Los Angeles, has pleaded guilty to stealing a commercial food mixer from a local school district so he could make dough for his own pizza oven. Larry Guidi entered the plea to a felony count of grand theft. He was sentenced to 100 hours of community service and 1 year's probation. Guidi was a warehouse operations manager for the Hawthorne School District until he was fired last year. Prosecutors say a security camera recorded him loading the giant mixer and a cart into his pickup back in 2010. The $1,300 mixer was later returned. He had been the mayor of Hawthorne for nearly 20 years, but didn't run for re-election last year, probably because he was too busy making pizza. And a man identified as Antonio C., age 99, yes, 99, filed for divorce in December against his wife of 77 years, that would be Rosa C., age 96, in Rome, Italy. According to a news agency report, Antonio became upset when he discovered 50-year-old letters from an affair that Rosa once had, as in 50 years ago. Now, that's not being able to let go. On both sides, because first of all, he's carrying a grudge about something she did a half a century ago, which some people might say is understandable, but some people might say, come on, you've been married to the woman for 77 years, let it go. And on the other side of the coin, she's been hanging on to those letters for half a century. Let it go. Okay, police in London stepped up their search for a man who tried to rob the Halifax Bank in October but escaped empty-handed. He had demanded £700,000 from a bank employee and then, intending to hand over the bag he had brought for the money, instead, absent-mindedly handed over his gun. Realizing his mistake, he dashed out the door. You see, you need proper rehearsal time for any kind of performance, pal. I'm just saying. Security at the JCPenney store in Provo, Utah, Town Center Mall, spotted Leigh Ife Davis, age 32, placing several items in a store bag. They say they watched her leave without paying, stopped her, and found nearly $600 worth of merchandise. Davis claims to have a valid excuse. She told police she owned the mall, was 8 months pregnant, and the clincher, she had played Rudy Huxtable on The Cosby Show. That character, however, was played by actress Keisha Knight Pulliam. Davis was charged with retail theft, enhanced to a felony because of prior shoplifting convictions. Anybody consider also tossing in a psych evaluation? Had she actually been Rudy, the whole matter, by the way, would have been resolved in 22 minutes with an important lesson learned, because that's what always happened on that show, but I digress. Finally, in this section of Stuff File News, you know we often love to share stories on this show that deal with truck spills, and this would be the latest one. Piles of sauerkraut tumbled out of a truck on a busy German motorway and quickly froze to the Autobahn surface, causing a massive traffic jam near Frankfurt during the early morning rush hour. A truck carrying hundreds of packages of the famous German pickled cabbage delicacy crashed into another vehicle before dawn near the western town of Friedberg near Frankfurt and scattered its contents across the motorway. With temperatures far below zero for the last week, the sauerkraut froze almost instantly and created impassable obstacles, causing traffic to be backed up for 10 kilometers. The motorway was completely shut down for 4 hours while authorities struggled to scrape the frozen sauerkraut away. Gee, the sauerkraut on the road must have left the German motorists in an angry mood. I wonder what would be another term for an angry German. Anyway, moving right along, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? David Golshan is a stand-up comic. He's also one of the people who was on Millionaire Matchmaker and is one of the stars of Ryan Seacrest's new show that comes out in March called Shaws of Sunset. And David joins us on the line from California. Hi, David.
Hi, Peter. How you doing? What's going on?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. I'm doing just fine.
Okay, cool.
Now, I've seen a couple of things I want to talk about. One that slightly frightens me. I've seen a description of Shaws of Sunset as the Persian version of Jersey Shore.
Okay.
That is frightening.
You should be. Yeah, it's very frightening. I suggest if you have real estate in Los Angeles, you sell it. This thing's coming out in a month, so just if you got gold and jewelry that you're dealing with Iranians, you know, in the L.A. area, sell it and, you know, just get out of town as soon as possible. That's my suggestion.
How did you get involved in this show?
Basically, it's the same rules as the 1979 revolution. You have a certain amount of time to just pack up your stuff and get the hell out. What happened was on Shaws of Sunset, they came to me and they said, we want to film you, you know, going out with your friends and going to you know, club. It's not really like Jersey Shore. It's a little bit different. It chronicles our individual lives. But I really can't talk any more about it until it comes out.
Okay, so it'll be coming out where?
And it's coming out on Bravo in March. I don't know if they have the exact date yet, but it's coming out about a month from now.
Okay, something else that was in the news recently. Everyone's fully aware of the fact that Kodak is going the way of buggy whips. They've filed for bankruptcy and as a result want to take their name off the infamous Kodak Theater. And you're thinking, I understand, if the story goes correctly, you're thinking of getting the naming rights for the Kodak Theater?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm working on at the moment.
How exactly do you plan to do this?
Well, basically, I'm getting a couple people together, investors of mine that I've done business with, and we want to buy the naming rights so that we can keep the Oscars in that theater and hopefully change it to the Golshan Theater or the David Golshan Theater. I'm not sure yet. My third choice is the Peter Anthony Holder Theater. But I don't know. That's a distant third.
That's just too many letters and way too much lighting.
Yeah.
Now
the PAH or PAH Theater, PAH.
There.
To shorten that, you know, a little bit.
There you go. Now you've also been in some funnier die sketches, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do a lot of sketch comedy. I've done sketches for Funny or Die, for Comedy Central, my own website, davidgolshan.com. Hopefully we're going to get a lot more of them out there. We're working on some crazy new ones. So I've had some characters. Have you seen the one where I play that that Persian wedding singer?
No, but I'm going to check that one out now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, there's one where we basically make fun of these Persian wedding singers and bring it to like the national public, because it's kind of like if you thought regular wedding singers, American wedding singers, were ridiculous, wait until you get a look at these Persian wedding singers.
On a more serious note, because you started off talking and bringing up your heritage, you're a stand-up comic. You talk about Iran. There are people who, let's be honest, have no sense of humor when it comes to Iran. Has it been difficult for you as a stand-up comic to bridge that gap, to reach that audience, or are there just some people you can't reach?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm known as probably like the most controversial and most blunt comedian of Persian descent. And, you know, a lot of Persian comedians will go up there and you know, they'll say, oh, you know, isn't this funny or isn't that funny? I'll talk about the real, like the issues that people are really thinking about but don't want to say out loud, like virginity, how, you know, anybody, all like Persian girls have to pretend that they're virgins, you know, even now, even though they slept with the entire high school football team, like they're still going around saying they're virgins, you know. So I talk about that, and I talk about all these like different sacred topics, but, you know, if it's funny, it's funny. You know, if I think it's funny and my fans think it's funny, then we can't care about people that, you know, take it too seriously.
Well, of those who might take it too seriously, who do you have to concern yourself with more? People from mainstream communities or people from with a Persian background?
You know, there are some people in the Persian with a Persian background who don't have a big sense of humor, but those are not the ones that come to the comedy club. I don't see them at the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Store or in any of my shows. So they're the ones that might go on the internet or, you know, stay at home and, you know, sit on their carpets and drinking tea and you know, talking smack about it, but they don't come to the shows. So I haven't been heckled by a fundamentalist yet on stage, which is good.
Okay. And just to clarify things for the audience, you're not exactly off the boat. You're born and raised in Long Island. Born in Long Island, rather, raised in Beverly Hills, California. Went to American schools. But I'm just curious to know, what about your family? How do they feel about the idea? Or when you first started in the world of stand-up and you went to your family and said, this is what I'm going to do, what was their reaction?
You know, my parents were supportive, but they don't really understand a lot of the comedy. Like, they don't understand. My parents are funny and they're awesome and they're great, but they don't understand stand-up comedy. They think that any topic you talk about has to be taken literally, you know. So if I'm Jewish too, so like I go up on stage and I say I'm Iranian and I'm Jewish. You know, I'm confused. I'll go to a club, I'll throw money in the air, I'll make it rain. But then at the same time, I'll push everybody out of the way to catch the money before it hits the ground, you know. And my parents, like, don't understand, like, that concept. Like, they think, why do you have to punch people to pick up the money after you throw it? I said, because I'm Jewish, too. You know, I want that money. Give me that money back. We need to invest it. Put it back in my pocket. So they don't really get it, but at the same time, they're supportive.
As someone of Persian descent, you also do a lot of acting. Do you find yourself getting typecast?
Not yet. I play a huge range of characters. I play everything from a taxi driver to terrorist number 7. You know, so it's a big stress spectrum. No, I'm kidding. I haven't been typecast yet, but who knows? Who knows? I haven't done a lot of different roles, but maybe after this interview, I can get typecast as terrorist number 3 and move up in the world. I don't know.
I was just going to say the same thing, so there you go.
Yeah, why not? You know, a Persian movie called A Separation won the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Movie.
That's true, yes.
So who knows? Like, one of these days I might play like the main terrorist, you know? One can only hope.
One can only hope. In the meantime, we can look forward to Shaws of Sunset hitting the TV screen sometime in March on Bravo, correct?
Yes, that's true. That's going to hit. That's going to hit the screens in March, and then also I'm doing a lot of stand-up appearances right now. I'm touring. I'm going to be in LA for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then you can check out my tour schedule on my website, davidgolshan.com or on my Facebook at David Golshan, or Twitter as well. Anything you want. But come to my house. I'll tell you personally.
Are you still on MySpace?
MySpace? No, I don't have a VCR either, no.
Okay. David, yeah. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. Again, people can check out your website, which is davidgolshan.com. And I thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Really appreciate it.
David Golshan. You can check out his website at davidgolshan.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0130, and you'll find links to David's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. This week, America celebrates the 203rd birthday of one of the most respected leaders our nation has ever known, Abraham Lincoln. While most of us remember Lincoln as one of our greatest presidents, many believe he was also one of the wisest lawyers to ever practice law. Oh, he lost his share of cases, but his high ideals and his refusal to sue another person unless it was a last resort earned him great respect. Listen to what he had to say to his fellow lawyers on the topic of suing another person. And I quote, "Discourage litigation. Persuade your neighbors to compromise whenever you can. Point out to them how the nominal winner is often a real loser in fees, expenses, and waste of time." End of quote. What wonderful advice. Now, let's be fair. Lincoln knew that people will have disputes from time to time, but he also knew that there are often better ways of resolving them than in court. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Choosy Mothers Choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the world's most expensive hot dog. Plus, we have an idiot of the day and more Stuff File news. Got Stitcher? We are on it, so get it. Stitcher, the award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile device. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And when a woman left her iPad in a Family Dollar store in East Naples, Florida, and you know she can play this program on Stitcher on her iPad, by the way, she did what most people would do. She told the store manager it was missing. According to police reports, the manager, Veronica DeMasso, age 23, did what most store managers would do. She told her that they didn't find it and aren't responsible for lost or stolen items in the store. The woman left her name and number but thought DeMasso was acting suspiciously, so she asked Collier County deputies to help. DeMasso became nervous when deputies asked for store security camera tapes. Then, when they told her the iPad's GPS would help them track it down, she confessed to having the missing tablet. She was then arrested on a felony grand theft charge. I'm pretty sure you're responsible for lost or stolen items when you actually, you know, steal them. An unnamed 62-year-old woman was walking her dog in Santa Cruz, California, when a mugger suddenly confronted her. "Give him everything she had," he said, "or he'd kick the dog." She handed over a bag and the robber fled. His total take? One pile of dog droppings, which she had just picked up from behind her pooch. Sometimes you are what you steal. That's all I'm saying. Tiffany Simpson Najira, age 25, of Clewiston, Florida, called the sheriff with an interesting problem. Her purse had been stolen, and the thief had sent her a text message with a ransom demand. He first asked for $100, but later increased the price to $200. She set up a time and place to make the exchange, and sheriff's deputies surrounded the spot. When they saw the trade take place, they moved in. Michael Rawls, age 29, was charged with dealing in stolen property and unlawful use of two-way communication. Now, what's more interesting, the unusual crime, the fact that this guy was very close to becoming an idiot of the day, or the bizarre little statutes in Florida? Really? Unlawful use of two-way communication? Have you ever heard that one before? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next and last guest here on this week's program, Vanessa Gibbs, age 17, was heading back to her home in Jacksonville, Florida, when Transportation Security Administration agents at Norfolk, Virginia Airport would not let her through because of her replica weapon. You see, her leather purse had been stamped to show the shape of a gun. That, TSA agents told her, had been prohibited since 2002. An agent told her this is a federal offense because it's in the shape of a gun. It's a purse. Wow. Gibbs says, I'm like, but it's a design on a purse. How is it a federal crime? That's just what I said. She said she has carried the purse through multiple airports, but this time TSA agents refused to let her board with the bag. Common sense, Gibbs summarized. It's a purse, not a weapon. Common sense. A 17-year-old has more than the entire TSA, apparently. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program. You know, I was actually going to read this item as a Stuff File news story, but I thought I had to go a little bit further with this story. Dougie Love is the owner of Dougie Dog Hot Dogs in Vancouver. A couple of weeks ago, they introduced a $100 hot dog to their menu, the most expensive hot dog in the world. And Dougie Love is on the line with us right now from Vancouver. Hi, Dougie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, I'm so glad you invited me. I'm really, really happy. I love Montreal.
Excellent, excellent. So I got to ask, I mean, this $100 hot dog, I understand it includes a 100-year-old cognac, Kobe beef. What exactly is in it?
Well, you know what? First of all, we showed up with this amazing bun. And the bun's a foot long, okay? It starts with a sourdough sweet bun. Very, very sweet. And then we have a homemade bratwurst sausage, which is made for Dougie Dog Special. And what we do is we cut it open after we cook it and put it on the broiler. And then we infuse it with cognac, Louis XIII, which is Louis XIII, amazing cognac. And then we put Kobe beef over that, baby. And it's just like smothers in Kobe beef. And then we put very generous portions of lobster on it. 3 pounds of lobsters, tomatoes, and some truffles, and our secret sauces, of course, is amazing.
Okay, now the cognac alone, I understand it's a very expensive bottle.
Yeah, it's $2,500. I go to the liquor store, I say, listen, I want a bottle of cognac for $1,000. They say in the province last year, only 20 bottles came in at $1,000. I says, what's the next jump up? They go, $2,500. It's like, oh my gosh. Okay, I'll take two of them. And they said, what's the special occasion? I says, I'm making hot dogs with them. I blew their mind. They went, what?
Oh, okay, yeah, so how did you come up with the idea of the $100 hot dog? And how did you come up with the idea of the ingredients that went into it?
Well, you know what it is? I research hot dogs. I've been eating hot dogs for 40 years. I have Vancouver's number one hot dog restaurant, the only one on the West Coast here. And so I know hot doggers. And I started thinking, hey, for years of Dragon, Vancouver's a very multicultural city, like the rest of Canada is. And plus, we were going to be on The Dragon's Den, which is a CBC show, the most successful reality show ever. So I thought, I'm going to create a dragon dog. But then I wanted to do something special. I mean, hey, hot doggers, we're not into foie gras. Hey, vive la Quebec. I mean, I love foie gras, but not for on hot dogs, right? Not on, you know, no caviar. What do hot doggers like? Hey, they like steak and lobster. So I thought, listen, when you say, let's use the best steak, Kobe. Let's use the best lobster, fresh lobster. I mean, that's what we need 12-hour notice for. It's fresh. And then all of a sudden, there's an ingredient missing. And it's like, what is it? There's something I have to put in this. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and went, I got it. Cognac. Cognac and pork go hand in hand together, right? So it was just a creation. And of course, I started scrunching the numbers. It's like, this is an expensive hot dog, you know. We've got to charge $100 for this.
Now, up until the time that you came out with the world's most expensive hot dog, the last one that topped the list, I understand, was a $69 hot dog from Serendipity in New York. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right.
Okay. Now, the thing that...
We did purposely go do that on purpose, but it looks like we're going to be in the Guinness Book of Records. And, hey, now Canada has the cup of the hot dog. It's like the Stanley Cup of the hot dog world, right?
Right. Now,
it's great.
The thing that I find most interesting is because there was a lot of buzz, there was a lot of stories out there when you first created this $100 hot dog, and I saw stuff online, on Twitter, on Facebook, and they were saying the same thing. Anyone can say they're selling a $100 hot dog, but the trick is to actually sell one. But the reality is, you've actually sold a lot of these.
Okay, our first week, we sold 218 dogs.
Wow.
$218 hot dogs. And you know what? Yeah, it's not. And we have a lot of critics, you know. I heard all the radio stations, the chefs talking and stuff, and, you know, hot doggers are a different breed of people. We want to have the best hot dogs, okay? And Montreal knows a lot about hot dogs. They have their CDs there, right? I spent a couple years in Montreal. I know hot dogs, okay? But this is an amazing hot dog. And I have served every one of them myself. I have made every one of them myself. And the response is 100%, oh, my God, I'm coming back.
Okay, so you sold a lot of these $100 hot dogs. Besides people coming in to buy the hot dogs, you're getting press everywhere. What's the furthest place people have contacted you to talk about your $100 hot dog?
Peru, Colombia, Mexico City, Australia, Hong Kong. London invited me over to do the Olympics for this year. From Paris, everywhere. It's been unbelievable. We syndicated live all the way to New York. ABC actually got me to send them a hot dog, and they ate it on live television. It's been just amazing.
Okay, people already know who live in Vancouver. People are very familiar with your, you know, Dougie Dog hot dogs. How has the attention of this been good for business?
It has been unbelievable. I've been getting emails and calls from around the world, and people are coming here. And it's amazing how many people walk through that door now asking, is this the home of the $100 hot dog? And they just want to see what it's like. Now it doesn't look like our $7 hot dogs are all that expensive anymore, right? So it's been amazing.
So now what are you going to do? Are you going to try and top this? Are you going to come up with some other recipe for a different hot dog?
I got something better. You know what? Dragon's Den invited me back for another season. You know what I'm going to do? We got Dougie Dog, the diner truck. We're going to jump in that truck, and we're going to cross the country, turning everybody onto the best hot dogs and the best root beer they've ever had in their life. And we're going to go there and just show people in every little town and every city from here to from here to Newfoundland that, hey, the food truck and hot dogs are back.
It sounds like whatever you do, you have a lot of fun, Doug.
Oh, listen, you wouldn't believe it. We're having so much fun. As you can see, I've lost my voice. I've done over 123 interviews. My throat is, like, I can't even speak anymore, you know. But I love your show. When he told me you called and I was going to be in Montreal, I said, hey, I spent a couple years in Montreal. Ottawa's my hometown. I love Montreal. I'm doing this one no matter what.
Okay, well, Doug, I thank you very much for being on the program with us, and congratulations on coming up with the world's most expensive hot dog. Now, when do the Guinness people come and absolutely clarify that you indeed have the most expensive hot dog?
Well, I'll tell you what you have to do is as soon as they come through that door, I'm going to call you up and let you know.
You do that.
Okay, and then we can let the world know, you know.
That
would be fantastic.
Thanks for talking with us, Doug.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Dougie Love, owner of Dougie Dog Hot Dogs. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0130. And you'll find links to Dougie's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
In Willowbrook, Illinois, 38-year-old John R. Pasella allegedly called 911 around 4 a.m. and wanted to see an officer because he wanted to fight with them. The police were happy to oblige and showed up at Pasella's home. Now, when they did, he shoved the officers, so he was quickly arrested and now is charged with aggravated battery, resisting a police officer, and battery with intent to provoke or insult, which are, by the way, all felonies. Willowbrook police say they have had prior contact with Mr. Pasella, who is also a registered sex offender. Good times. Yeah. Why would someone call 911 because they want to pick a fight with police and do so when they already have priors, including being a registered sex offender? Oh, well, there's one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0130. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff again is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And at the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0130. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags and mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.